Welcome to DeFi Expectations. Today we have Michael Wagner returning from Star Atlas for a second interview. How are you doing today, Michael?
Hey, great guys. How are you?
Doing fantastic.
Doing good.
It's felt like a lifetime between the last time we spoke.
Yeah, it's been like 4 months now, right?
Could have been 4 years. I don't know. A lot of exciting things going on, but yeah, great to be back on to chat with you all.
For anyone who missed our first interview, please share a little information with us about yourself and your role with Star Atlas.
Sure. So Michael Wagner, co-founder, CEO of Star Atlas. Won't go, I guess, too far back in history, but I'm a traditional finance guy by trade or career. I worked in the fields of portfolio management and investment and securities analysis. I'm a CFA charter holder, but discovered Bitcoin through Scriptcoin mining with GPUs back in 2013. I've pretty much dedicated my life to operating within the cryptocurrency blockchain ecosystem since that time. Gave up the formal career in 2015 and focused entirely on crypto. Launched my first company in 2016. That's a crypto and cannabis company that's called Tokes. And we've had a number of successes with that business. It's still operational, but in mid-2020, with some of the guys that I was working with at Tokes, Danny Floyd and Jacob Floyd, we conceptualized and co-founded Star Atlas. And so the general idea there was to elevate the style of gameplay to a AAA quality gaming experience, but still integrating and including the myriad of benefits that can be derived from, blockchain as a financial service. So things like true asset ownership via NFTs and crypto native tokens. So your earnings can transcend the metaverse, the digital world, into the real world. And then the incorporation of a number of DeFi primitives so that our players have maximum ability to compound wealth and earnings within the universe.
Excellent. Awesome. We last interviewed you in April regarding the Star Atlas project. How has the project grown and expanded since then? Please share some highlights.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact timing, but in April, we were just kicking off the Rebirth campaign, Rebirth, Genesis of the Metaverse. And you guys will recall that was the digital art campaign where we released a single multimedia meta poster every week for 14 weeks. So it ran from April 24th through July 24th. During this process, we were revealing some of the lore and background of the game. Each one of these meta posters was enhanced with augmented reality. We worked with partners out of Vancouver called Shape Immersive to deliver the augmented reality experiences. And we also worked with some mainstream musicians and producers to produce audio soundscapes behind each one of those. So this is great. I see you have two of the Discovery of Iris. These are actually free to view by anyone in the world. So you can go to play.staratlas.com and look through all of the items on the marketplace. You can look through the collectible series, which this Discovery of Iris is one of them. And by scanning one of these two QR codes, it will pull up either Instagram or Facebook. And then you can hover over the picture after you hit continue, and it will bring that photo to life. So it looks maybe flat on the screen now, but if you are viewing this through your mobile device, it would really just come to life. You'd be able to navigate through the asteroid belt and get a sense of immersion. Every one of these has an audio soundscape behind it to give you that true sense of immersion. Yeah, so I mean, that was a really successful campaign for us. Not only was it great from the revenue standpoint, but it helped to attract many new users and collectors to Star Atlas. We got to start to give people a sense of what the Star Atlas metaverse is really all about, through that unveiling of the lore process.
I had a question actually real quick. How did you guys end up contacting all the artists, especially like the musicians? Because I think you even like worked with Deadmau5 on one of them, is that right?
Yeah, we did. We had some great musicians. So Blondish produced on a couple of the posters. Bassjackers was on a couple. Ricky Desktop, Swigo the Child. We had Deadmau5 on the final poster. We had Jason Silva, who's a well-known futurist, produce some voiceover work for us, and just these like really inspirational sayings in the background. Yeah, it's awesome, man. I mean, it was a combination of just our outreach, people making intros on our behalf. So, we have a pretty deep network across crypto already. And I would say it was also fortunate timing because this was around the time when, the NFT collectible collectibles, art, you know, some mainstream, we call it performers, and just artists were starting to drop a lot of content. Mm-hmm. And so I think timing just really worked out for us quite well. And there's a little bit of outreach, but most of it was word of mouth and people just, you know, making recommendations or suggestions to us of people that they could get included. And those are some great relationships. I'm really looking forward to, you know, the future inside the metaverse, inside the Unreal Engine version of the game, where we could host some concert series or music festivals, and we can, you know, potentially execute on a Rebirth music festival. So, you know, that should all be pretty cool. And the other partnership that we executed on during that campaign was actually separate. It was the Legends campaign, but that was a partnership with the Neil Armstrong Estate, also with the United States Space Force and SpaceX. And so SpaceX launched a Falcon 9 rocket. It held the Neil Armstrong satellite, GPS satellite, in it. They launched that into orbit, and it is now circling the Earth. And we created a poster for that. If you wanted to pull it up, it's in Marketplace and then Collectibles. But this was a you know, real world partnership with major historical figures. I think it's you might have to scroll down. There's quite a few that we've produced now. So it's in here somewhere. You know, things like the Armstrong patch came from that. But the other component of this campaign was that all of the posters, reaching various tiers of collection across the poster series, rewarded the poster holders with in-game asset drops as well. And so even just buying the first poster, for example, which was that Discovery of Iris, it cost $64. When we dropped the game assets, those assets are actually worth $120. We had estimated 58, but after, you know, concluding with our economic model and pricing, the rewards ended up being worth about 120. So not only did you get the piece of art, you got $120 worth of game assets. And then we also provided access to the two satellite IDOs during our token generation event at the end of August. So you would either get additional lottery tickets at Radium, or you would get access to a guaranteed access to allocation on one of the pools at Apollo X. So that was pretty cool. That consumed, you know, most of the time. Like I said, it was April 24th through July 24th. August was a super busy month. Full upgrade of our marketplace and complete integration of Serum and all of Serum functionality into it, so that when you go and trade one of these items, you see the order book, you have buy and sell capabilities, you can set different order types and quantity limits. But also in August, we released our game economics and tokenomic white paper. That was on August 17th. We launched a brand new website at staratlas.com. You know, once again, trying to create the sense of immersion and pulling people from the physical world into the digital world. And we released a cinematic teaser trailer at that same time. Yeah, so this is the website. Super cool. The cinematic teaser trailer was really a hit. More to come on that, actually, at the end of September. You'll see part two of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive little trailer. Actually, Fry, are you able to play it real quick?
Legend has it that somewhere on the other side of space is a diamond the size of a planet. And everyone is out to find it. So I guess it all comes down to one thing. Who'll find it first?
Yeah, that looks super cool. So yeah. I had a question since we were talking about Serum. So quoting a Medium article that you guys had actually released, I'm quoting, powered by the Solana blockchain and Serum protocol, Star Atlas provides real money-making opportunities for metaverse gaming participants. Can you qualify that statement a bit? What is Serum's role in that Star Atlas ecosystem, and what will DeFi lovers appreciate about what they can achieve financially by playing the game?
Sure. The primary reward mechanism in the game is one of the two tokens that we have in the ecosystem. So that's Atlas, which is the medium of exchange or transactional currency across the entire metaverse itself. Where we integrate Serum, though, is in our marketplace and in the peer-to-peer trading of these assets. So when we roll out new campaigns like we did with Rebirth and like we did at the beginning of September, which is the very beginning of our Galactic asset offering where we sold some ship assets, that all exists and lives entirely on Serum, which of course is the decentralized exchange protocol that is built on top of Solana. So the way that, it's not necessarily the way that people make money from the game, but it is the way that they transact with other users. And so purchasing a ship is kind of your stake into the game. You can play, you can earn money in the form of Atlas from that. You can liquidate Atlas on the decentralized exchange, right? So you can either, we don't have the functionality to trade that on the play.staratlas.com portal, but what's really cool about Serum is the way that their AMMs and liquidity pools work is that all of that is pooled capital on what's called a central limit order book. And so, as opposed to the way that other forms of AMMs work, all of the liquidity across the entire Solana ecosystem is actually pooled together on Serum itself. And so you get the greatest depth, the greatest liquidity, the lowest slippage, and really the best fees. And that is not only the one of the core elements of our marketplace, but once again, when we get into peer-to-peer trading of assets, all of those transactions will take place on Serum as well. And of course, be settled on Solana. Now, where we're looking at additional benefits for DeFi integrations in the future would be maybe not necessarily through Serum itself, but through things like participation in liquidity pools. So Radium.io is a DEX and AMM that's also built on Serum. So it shares the liquidity pool with any of the Star Atlas assets. And users are able to stake things like Atlas or Polis with Radium in a fusion pool where they get dual yield. They actually get rewarded in Radium tokens, Ray tokens, and in either Atlas or Polis, depending on the pool. And they also have USDC and Atlas and Polis pairs. So those allow our players that are holding these assets to stake to the LPs and pick up yield. And right now the yield's anywhere from say 100 to 200%. I know when the pools first opened, they were something like 300% APR per year. So compounding that would actually deliver superior returns. But we're also looking at things like decentralized insurance integration. So you can insure your ships, as well as decentralized lending protocols through Jet Protocol, which is an up and coming product on Solana that would enable players to rent out or lease out their assets. So their ships, they could lend those to other players via smart contract. The players that maybe can't afford that ship can spend a smaller rate to borrow it for a period of time with the objective of earning a net profit through it being actively engaged in the game. Whereas the people that are contributing assets to that pool are looking to pick up residual income very much in a kind of a sharing economy model, kind of like an Airbnb, right? You own an asset, you want to allow public access to that, and you rent it out to other people and you generate revenue through that. So DeFi is going to be a major, major component across this game. And we're looking at a lot of different protocols that would add value to our players. And the beauty of decentralization in general is that we don't have to build any of these, right? There's an entire ecosystem of products and projects that are building on Solana, and it just continues to grow exponentially. And we're going to be able to pick and choose which of those features we provide to our user base. And that will largely be based on which features and projects we think add the most value to our players.
So is Solana going to play any kind of role itself, like the coin token? Is that going to play any role specifically in the game? Like, is it going to be kind of like Ethereum where you have to spend that each time to make transactions?
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't played around in the Solana ecosystem at all yet.
Sure. It's one of the core benefits of Solana is it has extremely high transaction throughput. It's very low latency. Sub-second finality on state changes, but it's also very low transaction costs. So users aren't going to be subject to kind of the same, let's call it crowding that currently exists on Ethereum, where there's only a certain number of transactions that can fit into a block. And so people competing for that space are bidding up the price. Now, it's likely in the future, with ETH2 and with scaling that those transaction fees subside. But Solana is built as a layer one from the start to deliver very low transaction costs. So to your question, yes, users will need to have some balance of Solana in their wallet to pay the transaction fees for any one of the interactions with the chain that we actually record, but it's relatively de minimis. In the near term, we're certainly focused on developing and creating utility and value for Atlas and Polis. So Atlas will be the exclusive token and currency within the metaverse. Polis is a governance token, which actually permits those governors, the stakers, to not only earn emissions and yield in the form of Polis, but also submit proposals and vote on proposals related to the future development of the game itself. Things like asset release schedules and feature releases and economic decisions related to inflation. But Polis also has utility within the game in the political strategy component. So there's three tiers of DAOs within the game that starts at the faction level, which is kind of the highest level in game. There's three factions across the game. And so there will be three faction DAOs. And then there are regional DAOs and guild DAOs, which we call decentralized autonomous corporations. But the whole idea is that within these groups and these segments, the players that are staking assets to that get, they have the voting rights and the power to not only manage the treasury of the guild or, of the faction or in the external DAO, but also influence changes that take place over time.
I have so many more questions from that.
I have a couple I'd like to hop in with real quick, if that's all right. But there was something you actually mentioned, and it excites me a bit because I was going to ask about this, but it seems like you guys are pretty like far ahead in your thinking about how you want to do this with DeFi. But lending and borrowing seems like such a smart, like a no-brainer, just because some of the assets you can buy in the game are so expensive, like it would justify the greater expenditures to be able to borrow against that asset and use that money in the DeFi space, So I think that's awesome. And it leads to my my question then, which would be, so Solana, what did that downtime experience look like to you guys the other day when that took place? So what actually happened? And was there any downtime to Star Atlas?
I have to be honest, it was kind of best possible timing for us. We had no events going on that day. We weren't launching any products on our marketplace, and we're still in development on the mini game. So it didn't halt any activity within the game because it hasn't fully rolled out yet. So from a timing perspective, it didn't impact us at all. Also from a confidence perspective, it didn't discourage me whatsoever. What effectively happened was the node network of RPC nodes, the communication layer, and these validators, through a network of bots, and whether this was intentional or not, I don't think has been revealed. I think it was unintentional. It was just people trying to get access to an IDO that was being hosted, but bots were able to submit enough messages, let's call it, to the network. It exceeded 400,000 transactions per second before it was essentially an overflow on that node that crashed it. And then the node network itself, because of the spillover of each one of these requests flowing into surrounding node architecture, it actually crashed the network. And that's why it all went down. Now, this was actually a known issue. There was a fix that was sitting in review. So fortunately that, at the time that this happened, they had a patch that was ready to be rolled out. It just hadn't been rolled out yet. It did, it did take 16 hours or so for them to get that approved and rolled out, but the network was back up and running. And to my knowledge, there was no loss of, economic value outside of the fact that Solana itself, the token, sold off a bit, I think, out of fear. But by and large, I'm not discouraged. We know that this is a beta network. We know that there's a lot of experimentation still going on. I'm glad they discovered it when they did, before we have hundreds of millions or billions of Star Atlas users operating on the chain. But yeah, I don't know if that fully answers the question. But to me, it's just kind of part of the game. We're working with experimental software. I'm glad that it didn't completely take down Solana permanently, right? It was pretty short term, even though it was about a day.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's kind of hard to sometimes get that perspective when you go into crypto Twitter and people just want to FUD projects just because it's not the chain they're supporting. And, you know, for me, I'm kind of an ETH maximalist, but I still appreciate what Solana is doing. And I still appreciate other networks. But like you said, and I appreciate you saying that, it is very much, we're still in a test network. There's still a lot that we have to discover. And, you know, I still think that it's better to get the full picture before being judgmental about a network or whatever. But another question I had too was going to be on the nature of other networks. If there was a capability to bridge to other networks, would you ever have an interest in that for Star Atlas?
We would consider it, but having that interoperability adds a significant amount, a compounding amount of complexity to developing out the game itself. So it's one thing to say, you know, we fully support bridging between various protocols, and the bridges are being built. We're not going to build these. We're focused on developing the game. But when there are bridges available, like Wormhole Bridge between Ethereum and Solana, or Terra and Solana, or Avalanche, or BSC, whatever the case may be, I see that as a net positive overall for the ecosystem, because it removes some of that friction that exists in people getting comfortable with a particular protocol. You know, we're bringing a lot of people over to Solana, and there's still a lot of questions about, you know, how do I get my assets from Ethereum onto the Solana blockchain in the first place? These aren't exactly intuitive problems for people to solve. And so for us, there's a big education requirement, which we're happy to partake in. But you know, if there were bridges between all of these protocols and seamless transition of assets between them, I think that would be a net positive overall. It means that people that are purchasing assets, say on our marketplace through Serum on Solana, could bridge those over to OpenSea quite easily and sell those on the Ethereum blockchain, right? If that's where they want to operate. So it also kind of allows for arbitrage between the different protocols. And I think that that's positive for market efficiency. But with respect to building the game, we are trying to build most of the logic on chain, which means we have to develop out smart contracts, right, for every one of the functions that people interact with. And if we had to build a smart contract for Solana and for Ethereum and for Terra and for BSC, and then make sure that those are all coordinated, it's extremely challenging. So I don't envision us operating multi-chain at any point in the immediate future. Maybe sometime far down the line when interoperability becomes a little more seamless. But generally open to bridging, just building, we need to focus on a single chain.
Before we get too far from it, when you were saying that you're going to have the ability to rent ships from people like Airbnb, what would happen? I mean, like, I assume that they could destroy the ship, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of research that we still need to do exactly on that. Clearly, there would need to be a few restrictions. So first of all, they wouldn't be able to borrow an asset and then sell that on the marketplace, right? And then take the cash. It would need to be secured in a smart contract.
That would be pretty interesting if there was like an underground market that developed like doing that or something.
So in theory, I think that if an asset went into the smart contract and a loan was created as a result of that, or maybe not so much on the renting, but kind of circling back to your point about giving broader access to people globally to some of the more expensive ships. To me, that's a very compelling reason to offer lending. But in that model, somebody could essentially borrow funds with the exclusive intent to purchase a ship with it. Now, the ship goes into the smart contract. The funds effectively go to us for the ship purchase, or to whomever they're buying it from. And then that ship needs to be paid off over time. The loan needs to be paid off over time. Now, if they were to ever default on that, clearly repossessing the item would be quite easy. There would be some price volatility on the underlying asset that's collateralizing the loan, but that asset could then be delivered to whoever provided the loan, and they could determine if they want to sell it or hold it, you know, for later as repayment of the loan. And of course, the people lending the capital would need to be compensated for that. So I don't know what the interest rates would look like. It might be 20%, 30%. But the other restriction that we would have to have in place is, I think we all talked about the deep space high risk zone that we have in Star Atlas, where there is permanent ship destruction. Users that possess an asset that's in one of these smart contracts would not be able to enter into that space, because if they lost the ship, if it got destroyed, They would never repay the loan. They would just default and there'd be no recourse. So we'd have to implement some features to restrict things like that. But, definitely things that we're thinking about now.
I mean, would it be, cause like now that we're talking about this, my brain is just going into like all the most nefarious aspects of life. And I'm like, okay, so what if there is like, you know, kind of like underground gangs, basically, like, let's say, you know, there's like essentially a space mafia, like where they're, you know, or like a gang that goes and steals ships. Is that kind of stuff possible? Is that going to be possible? Essentially,
it won't be possible to steal a ship from someone. They still possess the private keys, or the smart contract in this lending model possesses the private keys. What we're developing out is a model wherein, you know, upon destruction or death, right, out in space, if your ship gets destroyed, some of the assets that are in that wallet that would be, you know, considered to be included in the same geographic location as that ship, which could be crew members or components, modules, weapons, defenses, the ship hull itself, any of these input components would be delivered to the winning party. So I fully anticipate there will be bands of pirates roaming out in deep space with the sole intent of attacking other players, destroying them, and capturing assets off their ship.
Okay. And this kind of brings up another thing for me too. Like, I've heard a lot recently about the Solana projects that are pretty much like people just bringing over like soul punks. Sure. I saw like the Bored Apes Yacht Club got pulled over.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm starting to see that, like, you know, there's a lot of people complaining that that's what like a lot of people are using Solana for right now. Okay. How would you deal with something like people making fake Star Atlas ships and assets like that?
I don't know that there's anything that we can do. You know, it's nearly impossible to prevent. I think you just really have to establish a strong brand presence. Uh-huh. Value is going to accrue where the utility exists and where the player base actually exists. And so, obviously there's going to be competition. There's already plenty of projects that are cropping up that are, you know, space themed like we are. Again, it's, you know, different projects, different user base, different long-term potential. We're just focused on building what we're building. Unfortunately, in my own case, my personal portfolio is completely neglected. I haven't even seen any of the NFT drops on Solana. I have to be honest. I am 100% dedicated to what we're doing at Star Atlas. So my head is very much in the sand with everything that's going on around us. But, I don't think that there's too much you can do, you know, and unfortunately it probably a lot of those products will go to zero in value, but that could be set up just about anything in crypto.
Yeah, pretty much.
I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about the Galactic Asset offering, which has been going on since September 7th. So we'll go ahead and play the video.
Sweet. So yeah, what I was kind of wondering was like, how long does it take to develop a video like that? How would the process of actually developing the 3D graphics go? Like, is that being built in a separate program like Maya? Or trying to think like some of the others right now. I think like Blender is popular right now. I don't know too much about 3D type stuff. And then what is Unreal Engine exactly in relation to what you're doing here?
Let me start with that. Unreal Engine is the game engine that allows us to present graphics and build the 3D world and manage things like physics and lighting. And Unreal Engine is the platform that, you know, we build the game inside. And so to your question about how long does it take to develop an asset or which program do we use, that video, the reason we released that studio trailer is because that is an actual Nanite enabled UE asset, which means that is the exact asset that you'll see when you're playing around in the Star Atlas metaverse, when we start to launch the UE version of the game. Now we are building a mini game, and we're building, so that's in browser, and we're building a full production game in Unreal Engine. So I think people are really significantly underestimating the pace at which we're going to be able to develop because we're working with UE5. So this is the latest iteration of Unreal Engine. And we had, Danny would know the exact timing better than I would, Danny, our chief product officer. And he's really the expert across all things game design, development, concept art, production. He's the guy, right? He's the mastermind behind the game concept itself. We had two guys working, I think, for 2 weeks to actually produce that asset. But all of the assets that you're seeing right now in concept art form, we are already doing 3D modeling work on and dropping that in. You know, that's all being developed within Unreal Engine. And then that seat, for example, what's really amazing is that the quality and texture on that seat is actual hard surface. So it's not a texture that's laid down for a visual. It was actually, you know, programmed in to have all of the little detail. So pretty amazing that we could have two guys that knock out that asset in that video within 2 weeks, I would say. But we continue to scale the team on that side, and all of the game assets that people are purchasing now are going to be of that same graphical fidelity in the future.
So, I mean, everyone can expect this to look basically pretty incredible when it's actually launched.
Yeah, I mean, even everything from the lighting that you were looking at in that video to the asset, the glare, the reflection, the paint, the seat texture, all of that is in, you know, we put on there, it is in engine, it's captured in engine. So that is, once again, when you're playing inside Star Atlas in the future, that would be the exact asset that you're actually flying around on. It will have that appearance and that feel. So it's pretty incredible cinematic quality tech. And Unreal Engine 5 just makes the development process so much easier. And this is, you know, this is kind of a naive perspective because, again, I'm not the game developer. That's more Danny's wheelhouse. But, you know, I can just see the production coming out and, you know, just seeing that video. It's amazing what we're going to be able to build in a relatively short amount of time.
The ships are such a huge investment, though. I mean, it's probably worth it, though, if you're playing the game pretty deep. How does it work if you were to buy a commander ship? Like, what kind of extra abilities do you get? What hold on the game do you have then?
Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that you asked the question. There have been a number of, I guess I wouldn't say concerns, but people have been outspoken in the community about the pricing. I want to be very clear here. We're developing Star Atlas, the metaverse, as a product that can live for an extraordinarily long time, potentially into perpetuity. We're not building a video game that people will play for a few years, but we're building a public utility that the world itself will have the ability to modify over time. And so a component of that is that there is aspirational wealth in the game, and there are items that are intended to be extremely rare and you know, aspirational to acquire. And so we have ships that start at $15. The Pierce X4 video that you guys showed, that was the studio trailer, that's actually the cheapest asset that we have in the game. It started at $15. We also have ships that will cost greater than $5 million or $10 million. Ships on the higher end of the spectrum right now where we see purchasers are not necessarily individual players, nor would this be a ship that you would want to pilot individually. These are very, very large assets. people who are purchasing these right now are collectives of players. It could be clans. It could be groups like Guild Games, you know, and they have 50,000 players currently. So, you know, if you were to look at this from the standpoint of an individual player, yes, it seems out of reach. But when you pool capital together, which is what people are doing externally, is it opens up opportunities for people to operate a single asset like this or make this a centerpiece to their entire fleet. And with that said, you know, we do have a reward structure in place that is going to be, at least in the near term, based off of the monetary value of the asset at sale. So, you know, purchasing an item like this would reward the player proportional to what somebody who purchased a $15 ship would receive, but just multiplied by the underlying value of the price. So I hope that helps address some of that question. The intent here is really to enable people to generate wealth for themselves. We would think that they would want to reinvest back into themselves, right? And take the capital, their earnings, and upgrade ships over time or upgrade land over time, formulate better strategies. I mean, the real purpose here is providing people with an opportunity to build a life for themselves in Star Atlas. It was never intended for everybody to own every single asset that exists in the game. You know, there are exclusives and, as I said, highly rare items. But we really want to see cohesion between groups, people operating and working together to purchase these capital assets and commander ships and titans and our mothership when that comes out. But it's you know, there's a lot more to this and a much longer time horizon than making a bunch of money in the short term, especially off of, you know, cheaper assets that everybody can acquire.
So are people going to be able to build things inside this, or is everything going to be things that you guys release?
No, totally. That is one of the major gameplay loops. So ship missions, which let me describe maybe the three different components of the mini game, which consists of ship missions, land development, and orbital space station construction. They all work pretty closely hand in hand, complementary to one another, but the land development component of the game is where people are able to take possession of land, produce materials, so a variety of commodities, but let's just call it all ore. That ore then can be refined into things like alloys and metals and composites, and those become input materials in a legitimate supply chain to craft NFTs based off of some blueprint. And so users will use their mining equipment as well as use peer-to-peer trading on the decks, circling back to what we're doing with Serum, which will be directly integrated in the game. But when you look at the game marketplace and you look to purchase, say, some mineral or material, that is actually being sold by another player. And the transaction is being executed through Serum on Solana. So through that process, players will be able to craft their own NFTs, and having capital assets like those larger ships provide the modality to be able to create these big items. So you need, you essentially need a shipyard dock to be able to produce an item of a certain size. And so bigger ships and bigger space stations will be able to produce bigger assets. And that's the idea. So ship missions itself is about exploring space, taking on missions, battling people, rescuing people, finding some data and bringing that back, completing missions and earning Atlas as a reward or some NFTs as a reward. Orbital space stations closely support activity on the ground, in that space stations have things like a refinery bay, right? Or a hangar bay or a commerce deck and a trading deck. And what's really cool about the orbital space stations is that people are able to not only use those assets themselves, but should they decide to, they can provide access to that to other players. An example I like to use a lot is, you know, say you as a player own a space station in a semi-remote region of space, and you happen to have a refueling deck on your space station. Other players that are traveling around consuming fuel will need to refuel somewhere. And if you happen to be at that location, they can come use your refueling deck. And for providing that service, the owner would collect a portion of the total revenue that goes towards refueling a ship. So we're really, really trying to develop out a fully self-sustaining economy here in the long term.
That's pretty cool. So the last couple of questions I had all kind of relate to the token themselves. You had the recent like secondary, I believe, private coin offering, and then recently you did the public one. Is that correct?
That is correct. So at the end of August, from the 26th through September 2nd, we launched our token generation event, which consisted of an IEO on FTX and then two satellite IDOs on Apollo and on Radium.
So are those available in the US to purchase?
They were not available to US purchasers, no.
Now, why is that? Because I believe, I mean, it's a US-based project, is it not?
It's not. We're actually an international project. Our company is, well, there's really a series of companies, and they are all internationally domiciled. So the reason is not because we want to exclude US participants. It's because of the regulatory environment within the United States. You know, there's a high degree of stifling inflation, not inflation, but innovation across the U.S. because, you know, there's an intent and a motive to protect U.S. You can call it investors, you know, or token purchasers, whatever terminology you want to use. But because of the regulatory environment, it creates a, you know, a less safe business environment to operate in, which is why we operate internationally.
Okay. So it's more just a regulatory issue than anything.
Yeah, and that's really specific to the token. We don't have any restrictions on purchasing game assets. Our platform supports people from all over the world, but just on legal counsel, advice of legal counsel, the token was not available at the public sale to anyone domiciled in the United States. But other exchanges are, you know, at their kind of discretion are listing us. There's nothing that we can do about that. We wouldn't prevent it. We can't prevent it. We also don't necessarily develop those relationships. It's just when exchanges decide that they want to list us. Obviously, it's open source and it's blockchain protocol, so they can list the tokens. As these other exchanges open up markets, then I imagine there will be a greater degree of accessibility to U.S. Interested parties.
Gotcha. The other thing too is I had heard a rumor a little while ago that you had mentioned Tokes earlier that TKS might be used or accepted in Star Atlas in some way. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't want to reveal too much right now because we're still kind of on the early iteration of getting that introduced. It's also, we have to be very sensitive in the way that we do introduce it because Star Atlas itself is very new as a product. And we already have two tokens in the game. So we want to make sure that we minimize the amount of confusion out there by introducing a third token. But we do have some cool concepts that include, you know, some forms of farming inside the metaverse and land development inside the metaverse. And we could see Tokes having a suitable place there.
So one of my final questions is basically, where are you at right now with the release playability, and is anyone able to actually get in game right now and start doing anything?
So we're very close. The enrollment process to play the mini game, and I'll emphasize that we are spending, well, we have two teams, but the engineering team right now is pretty heavily focused on building out this web version of the game, web app game that you can play in browser. And that's where the three different modules of ship missions of land development and orbital space station construction exist. We're rolling out enrollment on Tuesday, the 21st. So that's coming up very soon. That enables things like profile. It will enable name selection, which is going to be secured through a purchasing process, but the user would actually own their name and could turn around and sell it later. We have leaderboards across individual players, factions, and guilds. We also have a faction selection process that will take place. So you'll be able to commit your resources to a faction. The next iteration of the mini game is to release ship missions, and we're targeting 4 to 6 weeks for that. So anticipate sometime likely in October for ship missions to come out. Players will be able to deploy either individual ships or entire fleets of ships. They'll also be able to commit their fleet to a multiplayer pool where people can combine resources in a purely decentralized fashion through a multiplayer queue and take on bigger missions together, try to complete missions together. So, and then every, you know, I would expect 4 to 6 weeks following that, we'll release we'll have a new feature release that would lead into land development and then orbital space station construction. With respect to Unreal Engine, there's a decent chance that we will have the first playable module of that by the end of this year. You know, gameplay is kind of a not necessarily the term I would use. It will be a 3D environment that is designed around a showroom where people can enter in, they can socialize, they can view ships, they can configure ships, so change out components and modules and start to specialize. And then they can deploy their ship missions through this client as well. Not necessarily free flight, they won't be flying their ships, but they would be able to execute these missions, and all of the assets that people would be looking at would be of this cinematic quality that we showed in that PierceX4 studio trailer. So the other component that I would mention that is not necessarily gameplay, but it is governance. And we're also putting a good deal of time right now into launching the Polis DAO, which is the Star Atlas DAO governance protocol. And when that comes online, people will be able to stake their Polis. They'll be able to earn staking rewards or emission for staking. They'll also be able to submit proposals and vote on those proposals that will lead to potential changes or the implementation of those requests by us as a development studio. And that's probably 3 to 4 weeks out.
So then just to make sure, like the mini game that's coming out, is that going to have any kind of application to the actual game that's going to be coming out, or was that just kind of a separate entity?
No, it will. What's really, you know, novel about developing on blockchain and using blockchain as the underlying data structure is that there will be synchronicity across any of the platforms that we deploy on. And so this mini game that we're developing for now that lives in a web browser is something that we will continue to maintain into the foreseeable future, because not everybody is going to have computing hardware necessary to enjoy the full Star Atlas experience, right? A lot of users, especially those users in developing nations, might not have access to anything except for a mobile phone. So giving them optionality to either participate in the web browser and complete the same gameplay mechanics, or even through a mobile application, should we develop that in the future, means that all of the actions that exist across all three of those platforms actually synchronizes at the blockchain layer and would be realized in all of the other environments. So for example, if somebody plants mining equipment in the web browser at a specific location, and you're playing in the UE version of the game, you'll actually see that same equipment get placed and start to produce. So I think that that's really cool that we can actually develop an app out across three different UIs and that the actions of players across all three synchronize in real time.
Well, I know you got to get going. Last thing I wanted to say, we had some audience questions that people were starting to ask. I think you had actually started answering those on Twitter. So I guess, you know, if you haven't gotten to all of them, I guess keep doing that. And I'll try and follow up with them. If anyone else wanted to follow up with those too, we can try and keep that going and post that up, answer some of those questions, and maybe share those around if other people have questions too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe just as a closing comment, I think you guys have been in there, but maybe not. But on most Fridays, we host a town hall in our Discord. So it's discord.gg/StarAtlas. You'll see the amphitheater, and you can join. And this is a live Q&A session. I say almost every Friday. We're taking this Friday off, but generally, we'll give you product updates, roadmap updates, kind of progress that we're making, and then we bring people on stage. This is kind of like a Clubhouse format, but in Discord, but we bring people on stage. They can ask any question they want and we respond to those questions. So we're totally open and transparent. We'd love to communicate. We're trying to get as much information out as quickly as possible, but we'd love to see more people there and they'd be welcome to ask their questions in our town hall as well.
Awesome. Well, I definitely appreciate your time. I know you're pretty damn busy lately. So thank you very much for coming on again.
Yeah, thank you. No, that was it. I just wanted to give him the opportunity to say anything else he wanted to say in closing, but I'm pretty much good to go.
That's it, guys. Yeah, I know. Sincerely appreciate the time. It was good catching up with you again. It has been a number of months and a lot's happened. So definitely looking forward to doing this with you again. Maybe not 4 months down the line. Maybe we'll do it sooner, but really appreciate the time with you guys.
Absolutely. Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Take care.
Awesome, guys. We'll see you.
Later.